City. It's the Gary Knowles Show. And now, your host, Gary Knowles. I still remember
when you used to be now. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how a very inexpensive, easy-to-obtain vegetable can help cure ulcers. I'm going to take you on a whole tour of all the different simple, easy, inexpensive ways we can stay healthier. Then we're going to look at some important issues that I don't believe that we're honest about our input, and hence denying the consequences. I'm going to give you an example. I believe that equally responsible as the neocons and the Republican conservative, especially the Beltway pundit, the Beltway pundits are those who kind of have a permanent community in Washington, D.C. They have offices or lobbyists, and they're always hustling the government, which means we, the taxpayer, to fund them for things we really don't need that are actually against us, like the military-industrial complex or subsidies for Big Pharma or other corporations. So I'm going to talk back to them in two ways. First, I'm going to share a short segment from Judge Napolitano. This got him fired. Immediately after he said this on Fox, he was fired. What are your thoughts on what you're going to hear Judge Napolitano say? I'll hold my thoughts till after you share yours. Our talkback number in a little bit, call in not now, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. So we're going to have a talkback on that, but we're going to have a really interesting talkback when Abby Martin goes to Israel to talk with both those living, the Jewish population living, a normal life. And she's not talking with Palestinians. She wants to get the view of normal people on the street. What are your views about the Palestinians? What do you think should be done? Now, this is an extremely emotional issue for a lot of people. It's pure reactionary, either on one side or the other. I would like to see what people in this audience believe should be the solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And do you believe that the media has been honest in its portrayal of either side? So that'll be our second one. But because of what Abby Martin, who I have an enormous amount of respect for her, what she has done is brought a whole establishment against her. APEC, they're all going after her. She's being attacked. The trolls are after her. And I believe she has the strength of character to withstand the attacks for airing this segment just on the internet. So we'll play that. Interesting. Also, time probably won't be available today, but I want to talk about what's in a flu shot. What are you actually getting injected into your body? And what certainty is it that there's any safety or efficacy in it? But when time happens, I'll share that. Because not everyone can be at their radio or at the internet to listen to this program each day, Monday to Friday, noon to 1, I have a number you can call. Call this number from anywhere in Canada or the United States, and you can listen. Please write it down. 424-203-8046. 424-203-8046. But 99% of the people listening to this show now, according to my latest statistics, listen at home at night over the archives. You can listen to up to 5 programs at one time by calling this number. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. So no matter when you're on vacation, you can't get to the, internet or a phone, you can go to the archives and listen. 701-719-9976. Now, we always begin with health and healing. because it's something that impacts all of us. But part of that health and healing is knowing what not to do or what we've been doing without thinking about it that could cause us to be sickened. According to the Natural Blaze, a publication I respect, they do good work. Plastic, which was once regarded, and be honest about it, put it in perspective, proper context. Petroleum products at one time literally dramatically improved the conveniences that we now take for granted. And they were also versatile. But now we're seeing the downside of it. It's actually become one of the biggest environmental problems of our time, according to the Natural Blaze. And it's easy to see the extent of the contamination when you visit the oceanside. Even the most remote beaches are often littered with plastic debris. Now new evidence reveals the problem of plastic pollution hits much closer to home. What are called micro, meaning very small plastics, invisible to the human eye, are present in our drinking water, and as a result, are polluting our body. An investigation commissioned by Orb Media revealed that microplastics are present in 83% of drinking water samples. The study encompassed more than a dozen countries, including the United States, United Kingdom, France, Germany, Lebanon, Indonesia, Ecuador, and India. You're talking about some large populations. When compared with contamination rates, get this. The United States has the highest contamination rates at 94%. That means 94% of all the drinking water in America coming out of your faucet is polluted with microplastics, and there's not a single thing your local filtration system can do about it. And startlingly, each country in the analysis had a contamination rate of more than 70%. Dr. Sherry Mason, a microplastic expert at State University of New York, supervised the analysis for Orb, and Dr. Mason stated in an interview with The Guardian, quote, "We have enough data from looking at wildlife and the impacts of its having on wildlife to be concerned. If it's impacting wildlife, then how do we think that it's just not going to do the same thing and impact us?" So, if fibers are there, it's possible that the nanoparticles are there that we can't measure. And once they're in the nanometer range, they can really penetrate virtually any cell in your body, any organ of your body, your heart. They can even pass the placental barrier. They can pass the blood-brain barrier. And manufacturers are using nanotechnology in hundreds of products that we're taking in. And there have been no animal studies, no human studies, to prove that this plastic easily releases the chemicals into the tissue and therefore it doesn't present a problem. They have no evidence. They haven't done their homework. Now, we all know it's important to recycle plastic because it's not biodegradable. By the way, there is biodegradable plastic, but it hasn't been widely accepted. It costs a few pennies more. This means that plastic may break down in smaller pieces, but the natural environment does not absorb it. Instead, tiny plastic fibers just float around the different ecosystems of the planet. For most Westerners, it appears we are effective at recycling, yet only a very small percentage of plastic is actually recycled. I'll give you some statistics. We estimate that eight billion 300 million metric tons of the virgin plastic has been produced to date. As of today, approximately 6 billion 300 million of these metric tons of plastic waste have been generated, and only 9% was ever recycled. 12% was incinerated, but 79% was accumulated in landfills or the natural environment. And if current production and waste management trends continue, we're looking at an unbelievable amount of metric tons of plastic that is in our environment. So why not do the following? Here's my suggestion for the day. Wherever possible, don't buy plastic. If you have a choice between a bottled water that is glass, bottled water that's plastic, or bottled water of a new type of plastic that is biodegradable, it's actually made of algae, buy the one that is biodegradable. It becomes a part of the earth. It is not going to pollute it, not hurt people. Second would be glass, even if you pay 5 cents more per jar. Next, get yourself a big hemp bag or a wool bag or a cotton bag to take this store with you. So when you buy your supplies and they say, is plastic all right? You say, no, I got my own bag. Or paper. Paper is biodegradable. So paper, but then you got to tear down trees to make paper. So why not have something that's permanent? You can take it to the store with you all the time. Then we need some products today made from resources that are finite. We have not yet evolved to that place where we don't. A car can run on, let's say, electricity, but the day isn't here where it runs on water. Is there a car in the world that runs on water? Yes. Is there a car that's made without petroleum products in the tires, the engine, the body, steering wheel? No. Is that day ahead? Yes. So I'm looking at a very favorable conscious raising, mainly by young millennials who are more idealistic and want to do something, and they're smart enough to do it. So I see the next generation making your current technology seem like a cell from the 1980s that you had to carry around in a suitcase. What the next stage? We will get to a place where we have a hemp car. And by the way, we actually at one time had soybeans that were used in cars by Henry Ford, and the person who made that, invented it, was, in my opinion, America's greatest inventor. And who was he? George Washington Carver. He was smarter than Edison at invention, but Edison was smarter than him in business. Edison is given credit for far more inventions than what he actually invented. Edison would hire people, including Louis Latimer, who was the first person to invent the incandescent light, African-American. And then he got rights to that. That then became his property. At one time, he had hundreds of scientists working for him. But not Booker T. Washington. He was unique, or George Washington Carver. He was unique. So he made a bumper out of soybeans. And when it came time for the people who were some of the corporate leaders to acknowledge the thanks of this man who saved the economy of the South, by the way, the boll weevil was decimating cotton, and he created the soybean. He knew more about soybeans, did more with soybeans than any person in world history. And he was such a humanitarian that at his death, he hadn't cashed several years worth of his meager paychecks. He lived a very humble life. They wanted to do something for him. So they built him a log cabin. So as a gift, Henry Ford and others built this. Thomas Edison also built this log cabin. What they didn't tell him was that to add their own kind of uniqueness to it, they brought in wood from every country in the world, so that his cabin, I don't even know where it's at today, whatever happened to it, but it was probably the most unique log cabin ever built, because he wouldn't accept anything. And just imagine we had such a person in our presence. Here's the question. Why don't we have a class on unique minds from America's past, and then simply list the people, irrespective of their ethnicity or their religion or their body politic, who contributed something of substance that we all benefit from today. And then we should put that into a computer system. So anytime you want to be humbled and you want to be educated at the same time, go there and look at all the men and women that we know nothing about today. They've been bypassed for the exhibitionists, for the Lady Gagas, and the insecure people like Madonna who have to exaggerate meager talent in order to bring our attention. And by the way, could you imagine when even with all their choreographed dancers and all their, you know, coming down off some type of high wire act that they do today to get attention like Gaga did at the Super Bowl last year. Could you imagine in their day if Judy Garland or Frank Sinatra or Lena Horne or Billie Holiday, they never had to do anything except share their presence. Their energy was so phenomenally high-level, vibrational, that they needed nothing to support their unique genius. And I believe they would all be embarrassed by what they see as passing for talent today, where grunts and moans and groans and everything hyper-choreographed. But behind it all, just some very insecure people have to keep drawing attention to themselves and not based upon the depth of their quality of performance. It's just not there. You go to some of these concerts, and the one thing you notice, they're never connecting with the audience, but they want the audience to be there for them. Maybe that's not your experience. That's been mine. Now, on to other issues involving our health. Dancing, your way to healthier aging of your brain. This is from the German Center for Neurodegenerative Diseases. Dance classes can be traditional exercise when it comes to improving an aging brain and learning more and improving your memory. Now, that's the finding of a study that compared dance lessons against standard exercise, including brisk walking among us healthy seniors. Over a year and a half, older adults who took weekly dance classes showed gains in their balancing ability. And there was no such improvement in traditional exercise groups. Researchers also found that all the mumbos and the cha-chas that they were doing had extra brain benefits. And seniors in both groups showed growth in the hippocampus. By the way, that's the brain structure that's involved in memory and learning. But the dancers showed changes in more areas of the hippocampus. So dance, and just this morning, I found out I was talking with a 93-year-old gentleman, and it was one of those interesting moments because I'm just finishing up our health support group that has been a very, very successful fundraiser for WBAI, our sister station in New York City, where I've been for 41 years, and the people just left completely invigorated and some life-changing experiences. This gentleman is staying on, and because I'm doing a study at the same time to see how lifestyle, just lifestyle, meaning behavior and diet and exercise and de-stressing, can show in a short period of time, 4 weeks, how the brain can change, how, in effect, you can rewire the brain. And when he came, he was with a cane, his wife was with him, and his head was down, his whole body was down. He spent most of the day in a chair, and he has Alzheimer's. And when you talk with a person with Alzheimer's, you frequently get what we call the Alzheimer's stare. There's just a stare with no cognition attached to it, meaning there's no awareness. You ask a question, you get a very slow answer, and generally not specific to your question. As of this morning, this man, no cane, bright, asked a group of questions. He was the one that answered them and answered them all correctly, but real quick. I mean, fast, boom, boom, boom. And then he blurted out, you know, he said, I used to dance with Martha Graham. at the beginning of my career counseling people, I counseled a lot of very famous people within the dance community, still do in the Broadway community in Lincoln. You have no idea. You would be shocked to know the kind of people that walk into the office or come into an environment, but a lot of them are from the major cultural institutions of the city. So I'm not going to identify them, needless to say, but that's enough. But that's been going on for 45 years. And one of my people I had the enormous respect for was Martha Graham. She was a rebel, but she was unique, and she was so gifted. Here's a guy that danced with her. Didn't know that. But then went on to start talking about other things he's done in his career. Didn't know that either. And then he talked about a specific incident. And he said, I came to a retreat you did upstate New York. I said, well, that was our first retreat. He said, your brothers were there, and we were walking, and there was a snake in the road, and you were trying to, you and your brothers thought, okay, let's get the snake out of the way without it scaring the other people. These are city people. They're not used to seeing a snake. And he said, I remember that. You went over and you grabbed it by the tail, and you took it over, and you threw it out in the weeds so it wouldn't be harmed, but people wouldn't freak out. Now, I'm thinking, how in the world with advanced Alzheimer's could he have that memory? But he did. His memory is back. His strength is back. He stands erect. He looks you right in the face. He can have a complete conversation without missing a word. And that's in 2 weeks. 2 weeks. But then a woman chimed in, and she has her 4 daughters. And she's here because Martha Caspi, who is 91 or 92. Marcia overcame in her 70s a terminal illness. And not only did she overcome a terminal illness, she went on to get married. And she is thriving in her health. And there are thousands of people who are healthier today because of Marcia Caspi and her husband. They're vitalist. And she has such a positive disposition. And she wanted one of her friends to come here. And here are these 4 daughters, 31 to 21. And the woman says, I was in Texas 25 years ago to retreat. And then not just, but all that she learned. And now her daughters were with her there as young, because they must have been 5, 6 years old. And now they wanted to come to this one. Why? Why are you here? To remind myself of what it is to get back into balance. Because what happens is in life, we frequently lose our balance. We get so preoccupied with our tasks, our responsibilities, making a living, helping other people. And as they get older, suddenly you're in your 40s or 50s and you've got a parent that starts having mental problems or physical problems. Now, as a moral responsibility, as it should be, we should never abandon our parents, ever. And putting mom and dad in a home is not the answer unless you're incapable of taking care of them, in which case, then you better look for every option, because I've also seen people that were going into homes today are healthy because the effort was made to reverse their aging process, and you can do it. It can be done. So 2 people, both from the past, but one guy showing us a part of his background. It just spontaneously triggered my thought when I was talking about that study out of Germany about dancing. So who knows how much of his health is based upon all those years of dancing that gave him a foundation, a basis. And that's good. But it's also in 2 more weeks when I finish my study, I will have him and his wife on the program. And you'll be able to hear for yourself. I already filmed him. I'm going to film him again in 2 weeks. I got him on the first day. I'm going to get him on the last. In 4 weeks, you'll say that's not possible. Well, there are a group of physicians here. Remember I told you a lot of doctors coming. They don't announce themselves. I didn't even know who they were. And they gave testimonials on Friday. And what they saw, they can't explain. And I would not explain it to him. I said, life wasn't meant to be understood. It was meant to be lived. You don't have to figure everything out. You don't have to reduce everything down to a common denominator. Just live it. And so it's just nice to let you know there's some phenomenal results. And they have already gone back to New York and New Jersey. And hopefully now they'll spread the word with other people that if they can get healthy, lose weight. Oh, and I won't mention her last name. But Linda from New Jersey came down. And she went to the doctor on Friday. And the doctor said, you dropped your cholesterol in 1 week, 77 points. How you did it? And she's just healthy living. He said, well, keep doing it. Because there's no medication I could give you that could do that. But also blood pressure, blood sugar, all normalized. So that's in 1 week. Good. Like it or not, your broccoli is good for your gut. Pennsylvania State University just completed a study, and they found that the vegetables you take in are frequently prebiotic, that when mixed with fibers and other microorganisms in your intestine, break down and become very healthy by spreading new healing bacteria. And it's especially good if you have leaky gut or colitis that you can benefit. Quote, there's a lot of reasons we want to explore helping with gastrointestinal health. And one reason is if you have problems like a leaky gut and start to suffer inflammation, that may then lead to other conditions like arthritis and heart disease. Keep your gut healthy and make sure you have good barrier functions so you're not getting these leaky gut effects, which would be a really big problem. End quote. So the takeaway message is this. Good intestinal barrier function means that the gastrointestinal tract is helping protect the intestines from toxins and harmful microorganisms while allowing your nutrients to pass into the system. And broccoli has chemicals in it that allow just that to happen. This was published in the Journal of Functional Medicine, Functional Foods. All your cruciferous are good, by the way, not just broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, because they contain a chemical I've told you about in the past. It's called indole, N-I-N-dole, D-O-L-E, gluco, G-L-U-C-O, sinolates, S-I-N-O-L-A-T-E-S, glucosinolates, which breaks down into other compounds, including endocarbazole, I-C-Z, in the stomach. And when I-C-Z binds to and activates the aryl hydrocarbon receptor, or what is called AHR, in the intestinal lining, it aids in maintaining a healthy balance in the gut flora and immune surveillance. It enhances your host barrier function so bacteria that's bad doesn't get into the bloodstream. So it's very, very important to have a healthy intestine. And the foods you eat, if they're healthy foods, they help that. And finally, from our health segment today, many years ago, I was working on the history of Russia and one Jewish gentleman named Aaron Simonovich, whose niece came to see me and gave me a copy of his diaries and letters. Now, he was important because he became the personal advisor and confidant and secretary of Rasputin. And I had a chance to meet with these what are called white Russians. White doesn't mean they were white-skinned. It means they supported the monarchy versus the Reds, who were the Trotskyites and the Leninites and later Stalin, though he really wasn't of that ilk. He was really bad. But I had a chance to interview Maria Kropotkin. I had a chance to interview dozens of these older royalists. Remember, they were members of the royal family and who are still living. And I got to know about a culture on a different way than I would have if I had read it in a book. They lived the life. They were there at the court of Nicholas II in Alexandria, and Olga, Tatiana, and Maria, and Anastasia. They got to know Rasputin. And so I studied all this and wrote a book on it. In any case, at that time, there was a journalist, and he was a highly respected journalist. His name was Guy Richards. And we were working on research together because we believed that the evidence existed to show that Nicholas II and his family were not assassinated at Ekaterinburg, shot with their doctor, but rather there was a secret codicil in the Treaty of Brest-Litovsk that a group within the British government, remember, the four different royal families, including the royal family of Great Britain, were all related to Nicholas II. So, and Alexandra was not British, she was German. So she, again, was related to the Habsburg dynasty. So they got him out through Malta. And today we have absolute, irrefutable proof this actually happened. And there were a whole group of scholars working on this. And I don't know if Robert Speller is still alive today, but he was a genius on all this. But the guy who was doing enormous amount of work was Guy Richards. And I'm sitting there one day, and Guy, he couldn't go on. He said, I can't go on, Gary. I said, we only started 5 minutes ago. Something wrong? He said, well, I got a bleeding ulcer. And when it starts bleeding like this, I got to take this meds. Then I got to go lay down. So I'm going to go home. And when I feel better, we'll get back together. And I said, would you be willing to try something? He said, what? I said, some cabbage juice. He said, why? I said, well, there's a nutrient in it that we're just calling now. It's not officially a vitamin. It's called vitamin U. Cabbage juice? I said, yeah, cabbage juice. It's that simple. He said, okay. So he went home and then he called me. He said, I can't find anything in the scientific literature supporting this. I said, yeah, you won't. But for those of us who have studied folk medicine and folk cultural healing, it works. And I learned this from my member of my family, my great aunt, and she used it and it worked. Try it. What do you got to lose? It's just cabbage juice. So he tried it, and for 3 days he tried it. And he said, you know, Gary, at the end of the first day, my pain went away. At the end of the second day, I felt normal. And third day, I'm completely normal in my constitution. In other words, I don't have constipation or blood in my stools. So I went to the doctor, and the doctor says, you know, your ulcers are healing. Now we know that those ulcers are called by E. pylori Helicobacter, which is a bacterium, and it can lead to cancer and frequently does. So that was a long time ago. By the way, the pet project is, at some point, I'm going to do a document on what really happened to the offs and how it was hid all this time. And because there was a member of parliament, Peter Bessel, there were other people involved who also looked at the evidence and saw that too many holes, discrepancies in what we've been told. So why were we lied to? I'll tell that story. It's a very exciting, interesting story. But in any case, this is today. Found some information from Natural Health. In the late 1940s, a Dr. Garnet Cheney, Cheney, a professor of medicine at Stanford University School of Medicine, discovered, quote, the amazing ability of fresh cabbage juice to rapidly heal a peptic ulcer, and attributed its powers to a substance he called vitamin U. Now that's 70 years ago. That's seven decades. Modern research has identified powerful antioxidant, antibacterial, and anti-inflammatory phytochemicals in cabbage juice. And that confirms its value as an effective natural treatment for ulcers. And so there was a gentleman, a scientist, who did original research, never heard about him, never read his research, and yet it's there. Now, in a second study published in California Medicine in October of 1952, Dr. Cheney reported that 100 patients, quote, with uncomplicated peptic ulcers were treated successfully and rapidly with raw cabbage juice. Now, as with the first study, ulcer crater healing time was shorter than in cases in which standard diet and drug therapies were used. Now, in 1956, Dr. Cheney published a third study with identical results. And today, no doctor in any medical school knows about this, even though this was a quality study published in a peer-reviewed journal by a respected person, because nobody would believe that something as simple as cabbage juice could treat something as complex as ulcers. But it's happening. The fact that medicine doesn't want to know this is a different issue. Why would cabbage be able to heal? It's relatively simple. A pair of essential amino acids we now know are in cabbage, glutamine and methionine. They're the keys to the healing power of cabbage. And by the way, Cheney's, I finally found the synonym, that the vitamin U, U stands for ulcer, and is generally considered to be methionine S-methyl sulfonamine, or MMS. And it's also known as S-methyl-L-methionine, or MMS. And it stimulates the formation of mucus and works as a powerful antioxidant. And studies have shown that MMS supports normal healing in the stomach after exposure to non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. And the amino acid L-glutamine, gluta, G-L-U-T-A, well, glut, G-L-U-T-amine, which means amino acid, A-M-I-N-E, is believed to be superior to commercial medications as an antacid. So the next time you have GERD or a problem, why not try a glass of raw cabbage juice? And there was a Dr. James Heffley, past president, editor-in-chief of the Journal of Applied Nutrition, who theorized that cabbage's, quote, magic ingredient could be allantoin, which is a compound found in comfrey root, and it's been used in folk medicine for stomach ailments. And so, just something to think about, something simple, something we could use. By the way, cabbage is also rich in glucosinolates, which convert to anti-inflammatory isothiocyanates, same compound found in broccoli. And those compounds can help suppress H. pylori bacteria, and that's acknowledged as the primary cause of most ulcers. And by the way, also what causes ulcers? Non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. Yeah, like aspirin and naproxen and ibuprofen. They can cause it? Absolutely. And H. pylori is an extremely common bacteria that infects 40% of the population. Just not everybody manifests its symptoms. It's generally asymptomatic and causes no problem. But in individuals, it penetrates the stomach lining and causes peptic ulcers. So that's that on health and healing. We're 38 minutes into our program. I did a little extended version of the health and nutrition part, but we're going to come right back at you. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. Just a little notice. If anyone in this audience, by any physician or healer, has been able to reverse a medically diagnosed condition that is not reversible in normal medical treatment, they might maintain it, but they don't reverse it. They don't cure it. But if you've been cured, where you no longer have the condition, whether it was your chiropractor giving holistic information or medical doctor, whoever it was, we're filming for a new documentary. Give me a call or give my office a call at 646-926-5422, or you can email us your story. It's probably best. prnstudio@gmail.com. PRN, as in Nancy, PRN, studio@gmail.com. And ask for Valerie. She is doing all the screening. She's the frontline producer on this new hard-hitting documentary I'm doing. We'd like to know your story. I've just finished interviews and demonstrations on 28 different board-certified physicians, none of whom the public knows. These are not controversial people. They haven't had best-selling books out there. They're just really good physicians. But what makes them unique, each one has something remarkably original that they're doing that I've not seen before, and they're curing people. So in time, I'll bring them all on the air. But also, I want your story to be told. So if you've had a remarkable cure from anyone, then let us know. I'll be filming the moment I get off this particular segment I'm in for another 2 weeks and continue that filming. I will be premiering as a fundraiser for our sister station, New York, a new documentary. It's powerful. It's done. It's just that the post-production group says it's too long. And I'm going to take a look at it this week to see if I'm willing to run it, even if it's too long, because we don't have to have it. One of the most popular documentaries I've ever done was 1 hour and 54 minutes. But generally, you try to keep it around 1.5 hours. Right now, it's 1 hour and 50 minutes. So if we can get it down another 5 minutes, I say 1 hour and 45 minutes, we're going with it. So I'm going to premiere it next in the month of December. So it's hard-hitting. When I tell you it's hard-hitting, it's quite simply the hardest-hitting documentary I've ever done. I've done some hard-hitting documentaries. Poverty Inc., War on Health, Prescription for Disaster, Drink of Our Children, Knocking on the Devil's Door. Those were not Shirley Temple films. This is the hardest hitting all, but also it's the one that you walk out of the theater knowing the truth in ways you've never known, knowing who's responsible for so much that's wrong. And because we name the names, show their background, show their connections. Wow. Wait till you see it. But it's coming at you. I got two more in production I'm doing now. A little busy time. It'll all get done. Now I want you to hear this, and then I want you to call in. This is Judge Napolitano. Agree or disagree with him on any point you want, but listen carefully to everything he says, and then give us your perspective. Is he right? Is he wrong? Our callback number is 888-874-4888. Here's what he had to say, and immediately after, this is only 2.5 minutes long, immediately after he gave this, he was fired.
Does the government work for us, or do we work for the government? Tonight, what if the Constitution no longer applied? What if the whole purpose of the Constitution was to limit the government? What if Congress's enumerated powers in the Constitution no longer limited Congress, but were actually used as a justification to extend Congress's authority over every realm of human life? What if the president, meant to be an equal to Congress, has instead become a democratically elected, term-limited monarch? What if the president assumed that everything he did was legal just because he's the president? What if he could interrupt your regularly scheduled radio and TV programming for a special message from him? What if he could declare war on his own? What if he could read your emails and your texts without a search warrant? What if he could kill you without warning? What if Supreme Court justices no longer looked to the Constitution to determine the constitutionality of a law, but rather simply to what justices who preceded them thought about it? What if the rights and principles guaranteed in the Constitution have been so distorted in the past 200 years as to be unrecognizable by the founders? What if the 50 states were no longer sovereign entities, equals to each other, and parents of the federal government they voluntarily constituted? What if the states were mere provinces of a totally nationalized and fully centralized government? What if the Constitution was amended stealthily, not by constitutional amendments duly ratified by the states, but by the constant and persistent expansion of the federal government's role in our lives? What if the federal government decided if its own powers were proper and constitutional? What if the Constitution were no longer the supreme law of the land? What if you needed a license from the government to speak, to assemble, or to protest against the government? What if the government didn't like what you planned to say, and so it didn't give you the license? What if the right to keep and bear arms only applied to the government? What if posse comitatus, the federal law that prohibits our military from occupying our streets, were no longer in effect? What if the government considered the military an adequate dispenser of domestic law enforcement? What if cops looked and acted like troops and you couldn't distinguish the military from the police? What if you were not secure in your person, in your papers, and in your property? What if federal agents could write their own search warrants in defiance of the Constitution? What if the government could decide when you were and were not entitled to a jury trial? What if the government could take your property whenever it wanted? What if the government could continue prosecuting you until it got the verdict it wanted? What if the government could force you to testify against yourself simply by labeling you a domestic terrorist? What if the government could torture you until you said what the government wanted to hear? What if people running for president actually supported torture? What if the government tortured your children to get to you? What if government judges and government lawyers intimidated juries into convicting the innocent? What if the government could send you to your death and your innocence meant nothing so long as the government's procedures were followed? What if America's prison population, the largest in the world, was a cruel and unusual way for a country to be free? What if half the prison population never harmed anyone but themselves? What if the people had no rights except those the government chose to let them have? What if the states had no rights except to do as the federal government commanded? What if our elected officials didn't really live among us, but instead all had their hearts and homes in Washington, D.C.? What if the government could strip you of your rights because of where your mother was when you were born? What if the income tax was unconstitutional? What if the states were convinced to give up their representation in Congress? What if the government tried to ban you from using a substance in your body that is older than the government itself? What if voting didn't mean anything anymore because both political parties stand for big government? What if the government could write any law, regulate any behavior, and tax any event? The Constitution be damned. What if the government was the reason we don't have a Constitution anymore? What if you could love your country but hate what the government has done to it? What if sometimes, to love your country, you had to alter or abolish the government? What if Jefferson was right? What if that government is best which governs least? What if I'm right? What if the government is wrong? What if it is dangerous to be right when the government is wrong? What if it is better to perish fighting for freedom than to live as a slave? What if freedom's greatest hour of danger is now?
Those were the words of Judge Napolitano. He was called into Roger Ailes' office and he was fired. What do you think of what he said? Do you agree or disagree? And why? Talk back. It's your opportunity. 888-874-4888. I'll wait and share my comments till after you share yours. Now we're going to go. I'm going to save Abby Martin for tomorrow because it's a longer segment. And I believe we're going to have a lot more people responding to it. And I want to have that opportunity to hear what they have to say, as I want you to hear their perspectives. But now, I think you'll be shocked at what the flu shot is really doing to you. Please listen.
It's funny you mentioned the reporting that goes on, or lack of, for some of these vaccines. You go back to the flu shot, and there does seem to be reporting. 2 years ago, I think, they said there was maybe 9% effective for a certain population. Maybe it was the elderly, I can't remember. In this most recent year, I think the effectiveness for the main vaccine was 47%. And I look at those numbers and I'm like, well, 9% is nothing. 40% is better than 50. You know, it's not even 50-50. What are your chances of getting the flu either way? Probably, you know, not as good as even that. Those numbers, to me, don't seem to support the effectiveness of the vaccine.
No, and they consider like 70 to 80% really good. And so for some strains, some years, it might be that high. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they removed the inhaled influenza vaccine this year because it was only 3% effective. And, you know, people assume that they go and they get their child vaccinated and they're going to be protected even after one shot. But the fact is that even after three or four shots of some vaccines, you're only 65 to 85% protected. Even with the measles vaccine, they're between 2 and 10% of people who take that vaccine who never respond to it. So they're called primary non-responders. So they're susceptible. And, you know, the reason they added the second shot, it wasn't for a booster. The second shot was added to that program around 1990 to mop up that 2 to 10% who never responded in the first place. But the problem is that those 2 to 10% don't really have that much higher of a chance of responding by again. They have somewhat higher, but not a perfect response rate even after that second shot. So, you know, it's a real kind of lack of false, it's a false sense of security that doctors and parents have after vaccines, that they are necessarily protected, and they're not. And even if they do work initially, they're... there's no guarantee that they stay. You know, is the more for instance, the more pertussis vaccines a person gets over their lifetime, the shorter they actually respond to it for the shorter period of time. So us as adults, you know, our protection might last 6 months to 2 years, whereas as a child, they just keep giving more and more and more of them, trying to build that immunity. So that's one problem with this feeling that the vaccines are protected. But you mentioned influenza, and there's something that a lot of people are unaware of, and I think this is a really important point to make about influenza vaccines, which is that you're talking about the effectiveness in the year that it's given. Then the following year, there could be a whole 3 or 4 new strains of influenza circulating. Well, there's plenty of medical literature and epidemiologic evidence that if you've taken an influenza vaccine on year one, that your risk of contracting influenza on year two is higher, your risk of getting a pandemic strain is higher, and your risk of shedding and spreading the virus for longer periods of time is higher as a result of what that vaccine did to your immune system the year before. That's a really important point that I think needs to really be hammered home to people, is that even if you are protected that first year that you got the vaccine, it has changed your immune system in such a way that your T cells can't respond using memory response. And so you are actually more susceptible than a person who's never been vaccinated. And that's been proven in medical literature. I speak about this publicly with the references on a regular basis.
Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. And let's say hello to Diane from New York. Hi, Diane. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Gary. Thank you for all the knowledge, wisdom, and peace that you share with the audience. And it's deeply appreciated. I listened to Judge Napolitano, and what if everything he's saying is the absolute truth? Because if you pay attention and stay aware, everything he has said has already happened and is happening to different ethnicities, races, and factions and classes in this country already. And there have been presidencies that were hyper-exposed in the media so that we can verify the things that he said. And what if Judge Napolitano stepped on the fingers of the Koch brothers and the powers that be? Thank you.
Good comments. Hold on 1 second, Diane. You really nailed it, because I was going to comment that as an investigative reporter, as a journalist who has broken over 300 stories, meaning the first of their kind, like the war on cancer, I couldn't convince the mainstream media to pick up and follow the story. I was warned that that wouldn't happen by my lead source, Patrick McGrady Sr., who was the head public relations director for the American Cancer Society for more than a quarter century. And I said, why'd you come to me? Why me? I'm a little nobody. You know, why not go to the New York Times? And he just laughed. We were sitting there and he's laughing. He said, you're kidding. Do you really think I'm going to go to the New York Times? He said, the New York Times will take on a story that does not threaten its own self-interest or ideological framework. So if you're going to give them a story that could expose their weaknesses, they're not going to run it. They'll play it safe. Now, there are times when I believe they have not played it safe, and I commend them for doing the Daniel Ellsberg Pentagon Papers, but it was not the New York Times that determined that the Pentagon Papers would be going forward. That was Danny Sheehan. Danny Sheehan, an outside lawyer, not from the New York Times, was the one who said, you can sustain a legal fight on this, publish it. That's what happened. That's the truth of it. So when you have someone like Napolitano, you could agree or disagree with him. He's a pure constitutionalist and believes in the Bill of Rights and believes in our freedoms. But look what he said. Everything he said has happened. If Chris Hedges were on this show today, Chris could show you that there's now a National Defense Authorization Act. Obama reauthorized that, came under a Bush administration, under Obama administration, but he reauthorized the Patriot Act, etc. So all these acts that can cause you to be arrested, right now in the United States, any single human being can be arrested without a warrant. You can be held without bail. You do not have due process. You do not know what your charges are. You do not have the right to have a defense lawyer. You do not have a right to any counsel whatsoever. You can be judged by people that you will not know in secret. And if they determine that you represent some existential threat to the United States, they can have you killed. You will be duly killed because no one who's ever there and trained in the killing machine has ever balked at it. And then your body would be disposed of or make it look like a suicide. Whatever they choose to do, they would do. And the world will not know that. Now, that exists now. And they've actually used that. In fact, every single Tuesday, Obama would have his kill meetings. He would be given a list of people and decide which ones of those people to kill. Now, you can say, well, those were terrorists in another country. Maybe they were. But how would you know? Everything was secret. You would never know. And do you really trust people with that kind of power to make proper and ethical and moral decisions? So, if nothing else, Napolitano, in that moment, brought to our attention that everything he said exists now. That, Diane, is where clearly you are up on your history and social events. Thank you for being that aware. I'm Gary Nall. Always my pleasure to be able to come on here and privilege to share whatever I have, and so we can work together on making it a better world. Have a nice day, everyone.